20th, 2013. This is the Heretic Hour, and I am your host, Pope Runyon. Tonight, we present a discussion on the symbolism and the meaning of the 32nd path on the Tree of Life. This lecture will include a review of our special path working on this subject, which we have recorded for members and associate members. And I will cover the tarot symbolism, the relation to the Saturn and the Cuba space, and the traditional Kabbalistic associations will be covered. Now, the text for this lecture are the Garden of Pomegranates by Israel Regardi and Volume 2 of Gareth Knight's Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism. So, as we said in the abstract, tune in and start the journey upward. Now, the 32nd path leads from Malkuth, the kingdom, at the bottom of a tree, that sphere we covered in a previous broadcast last week. And so, I think it'd be a good idea if you missed that broadcast to certainly review it. We have, of course, all of our broadcasts are archived. And yet, even so, I will mention that Malkuth is the kingdom. It is represents the physical universe. It is, of course, a very magical sphere. And sometimes it gets confused with the mundane aspect of the physical, but actually it's a very magical aspect of the physical. It's the magic of the physical world, where magic manifests, Malkuth. It's a whole dimension, which is known as Ashia in the Kabbalah, and this is the physical dimension. Now, the sphere of Malkuth is where we start, and of course it includes all of nature. And it also is, as we mentioned before, the sphere where you meet your holy guardian angel and bring your holy guardian angel down. It's also the sphere where all the magic comes down and actually manifests itself from the higher dimensions of the higher spheres of the tree. So with that in mind, Malkuth, as you look at the design of the Tree of Life, and I know that this is radio, not television, but I think most of you listening have seen that design, and you know that there are three paths leading up from Malkuth up to the tree. And, of course, there are three pillars on the tree, which contain the ten spheres. And the ten spheres are laid out in on these three pillars. So Malkuth has what you might say, by the way, Malkuth is called the gateway. It has three gates that open up. And you can go from Malkuth, you can go and take the 31st path up to Hod, the sphere of Mercury, the sphere of the intellect, the sphere of the mercurial attributes, and you can go up to Hod on that path, which is represented by the tarot card judgment. And, you know, you can do that, or you can go over the other side and you can go up to Netzach, which is the sphere of Venus, the sphere of nature, and the sphere of the natural processes. We like to attribute the sphere of Netzach to the goddess Astarte. And that is a water path that follows the card of the moon, the tarot card of the moon. Now, however, if you're going to follow the regular sequence for going up the tree and do it the regular way that it is supposed to be done, you will go up the middle, and you'll go up the 32nd path, which is, of course, if you realize, 32 is the bottom number. We have way we number these. We number the spheres from 1 to 10, Malkuth being 10 at the bottom, And then we continue to number the paths, and we come on down, and then the 32nd path is the bottom path. Now, this path leads directly up the tree, up the middle pillar, from Malkuth, the center doorway, if you want to think of Malkuth as we have it in our Adams's Quest map and our path working map. You've got Malkuth with like a temple, and it is a temple, with three doorways, three gateways. So the middle one goes straight up to Yesod. And Yesod, of course, is the sphere of the foundation. It's the ninth sphere on the Tree of Life. It's the foundation. It's also the beginning of the actual astral plane. It's the beginning of the Yetzirah dimension, the formative dimension. And it is the sphere of the magic mirror, the sphere of the moon, the sphere of memories, the sphere of emotions, the sphere of sex, all that sort of good stuff. And it's the sphere of dreams and the beginning of your astral journey in the Yetzirah dimension. Now, so we have a path working, a path goes up to it. And this path, 32nd path, is attributed to the tarot card, the universe. Now, the universe, I think you've all seen it. It's pretty much the same in all versions. It has the four cherubs, cherubs of the quarters around the corners of the card. And these are the animals attributed to the four quarters of the universe. You have the lion in the south, and you have the eagle for the water in the north, and you have the bull. The bull for Taurus in the north, the eagle for Scorpio in the west. And then you have the man, human man, for Aquarius in the east. And these are around the corners of the card. And then you have a wreath, an oval shape, a wreath, which kind of indicates a gateway, a portal of nature. And in the center of this wreath, is a beautiful woman holding a pair of wands, and she's draped with, covered with just a sort of a purple drape, shawl that goes across her. And she is called the Virgin of the World. And this card is pretty much the same in all its different versions. We kind of like the Pixie Smith White version, and that's one of the most popular versions. One of the things that I want to mention while we're talking about this tarot card symbolism on this path, there are and has been some controversy some time back. When the tarot first got applied to the Kabbalah, it was suggested that the fool be placed down in the 32nd path, that the fool should be down there. And as you know, of course, the fool, as it is now, the fool is way up at the top of the tree, up at the top of the tree. And there was a thought about earlier, there was a controversy about, well, you ought to put the fool at the bottom, because the fool begins the journey, supposedly. Now, the way to reconcile this problem is why the fool's at the top, and then why they wanted to put the fool at the bottom. Well, look at it this way. The fool at the bottom of the tree is the arch-fool. And the fool at the top of the tree is the pure fool. Now, what's the difference between the arch fool and the pure fool? Okay. Well, the difference is the arch fool does not know that he's immortal, but he thinks he knows everything else. Whereas the pure fool at the top of the tree knows that he's immortal and doesn't know anything else. And therein lies a mystery worthy of meditation. But apparently the arch fool has been given way to the universe, and so the universe is what we attribute to the path. Now, the path symbolism also relates to the letter Tau, the last letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And the Tau is, especially in the Phoenician, is represented as a cross, as a T-shaped cross, especially if you use the old Phoenician version. And this is also related to the planet Saturn. Now, and it's also related to the element of the Earth. Now, let me explain a little bit about this. You're all familiar, I think, with the cube of space diagram, and you know that Saturn, in the right smack in the middle of the cube of space, is the center and the beginning point in the Kabbalah for the physical universe. And, of course, it's easy to say, well, that's the planet. They couldn't see any further out than that without a telescope, so they decided that the universe started with Saturn. But, yeah, well, all right, but that's what we come down to is that according to the Kabbalah, the universe, physical universe, begins with Saturn. Now, Saturn is to some degree a malefic. It was much more of a malefic in medieval times than it is now. But because in the medieval times life was nasty, brutish, and short, and now it's just long and still, you know, long and a little less brutish. But so Saturn is no longer considered to be that much of a malefic. But Saturn is, and this from a Kabbalistic point of view, I think we have mentioned before that. The Kabbalah, the Hebrew Kabbalah, is short, two letters. So consequently, they didn't have letters for the earth element. They didn't have a letter for the earth element. And they ended up with a tetragrammaton. They ended up having to, you know, have an extra tau for, you know, it was yod, hey, wow, hey, and so they had extra hey, which they used for the earth letter. Now, instead of that, when they got around to the tarot symbol, well, the Kabbalah symbolism of the paths, they ended up applying Saturn to the earth. Because on the rationale that that's where the physical universe started, so there's a relationship between Saturn and the Earth. And Tau is the letter of Saturn, and so that's why we have Saturn attributed to this path, which is also represents the Earth element. Now, if you can wrap yourself around that one, that's good. Now, this is the basic symbolism of the path, and the basic symbolism of the path. Now, I'm going to read you what Regardi says in Garden of Pomegranates. It's kind of short, and so you'll get Regardi's basic aspects here. Okay, this is the Path of Tau, the 22nd letter, path number 32, joining Esau to Malkuth. Numerical value is 400. And this letter means a T-shaped cross. When without a dogish, it is pronounced as an S. And this path represents both the lowest dregs of the astral plane, which is not exactly true because that's the cliff lot and that's below that, but it's the lower part of the astral plane, to which is attributed Saturn as the great astrological malefic. And the universe in toto, represented by Brahman and Pan, as the sum total of all existent intelligences. And in the latter category is Gaia, or Gay, the personification of the earth, the goddess. Now, there is also the Norse Vidar, whose name indicates that he is the imperishable nature of the world, likened to the immensity of the indestructible forests. And like the Greek god Pan, he is the representative of silent, secret, and peaceful groves. And Anderson again implies that Vidar is the eternal, wild, and original nature, the god of imperishable matter. Saturn is an early Italian god, and is an earth deity also, and he, having taught the people agriculture, suppressed their savagery and introduced them to civilization. And in connection we have Sebek, the crocodile god, signifying the grossest form of matter, and such correspondences as of Spenodon, all evil odors, and the Hindu Tamil Gunam, the quality of slothfulness and inertia. The color is black, actually, it's indigo. It is indigo in the minutum mundum. Its plants are the ash and the nightshade, and its Jesuit title is the administrative intelligence. That's from the rabbinical Kabbalah. The tarot card is the world, the universe, showing within it a flowery wreaths female figure who has come to be known as the Virgin of the World, giving the path added significance since it descends upon Malkuth, to which the Zohar allocates the final hay, the daughter, and who is the reflection below of the Shekinah on high. At the four quarters of the cards are the four cherubic animals of the apocalypse, the man, the eagle, the bull, and the lion. Okay, and regarding, that's kind of a negative, actually, regarding, kind of gives a sort of a negative impression of that. I really, really prefer Gareth Knight's which is Gareth Knight's dissertation on the 32nd path in the second volume of The Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism is much, much more positive and a great deal more detailed and I think I really would recommend that be read to really, really study this path. Now, I want to mention a few things that Gareth Knight has developed here in his take on this. By the way, Gareth Knight gets you in perspective. Gareth Knight was the successor to Dion Fortune in the Society of Inner Light and carried on with her work. And his mundane name is Basil Wilby. He writes under the pen name of Gareth Knight. Very, very, very competent magician and a wonderful scholar. And I really, really learned a lot from this. In fact, Gareth Knight's Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism was sort of the bedrock of our pathworking system that we developed, which we'll talk about a little later on. And the thing about Gareth Knight's book is that he really, really goes into depth and brings in Jungian, Freudian psychology and just and mythology and brings in a really, really detailed and sympathetic and psychic view of all of this. And so what I did when Friar Apollinaeus years ago introduced us to Kirpal Singh's Sikh Sant pathworking system. This is the same one that Paul Twitchell of Econcar developed his from. I knew that I had to catalyze this. It's a wonderful system. This is the hypnotic induction, and then you have the attention points that you bring back with you so you can learn the various secret messages that the aspects of the path have to teach for you. This is Kirpal's method. And I knew that I had to catalyze it, and so I used Gareth Knight's two-volume set as the backbone for doing that, and I heartily recommend this. It's hermetic, by the way. It's just very, very definitely hermetic. And basically in the Golden Dawn tradition. So what I want to say is that Gareth Knight deals with this path as the path, in a psychological sense, the 32nd path is the path of Freud. Freud would, this is the path where the sexual aspects from childhood and whatever are dealt with. And then after you get through, you saw it, if you're going on up, the 25th path, which is attributed to temperance, by the way, that, according to Garrett, to what Gareth Knight is saying here, that's Carl Jung's path. That's, you know, then you're dealing with the Jungian. Well, of course, there are plenty of Jungian aspects to what Basil was talking about here. He is also relating this path to Persephone and Demeter and the Eleusinian mysteries. And in fact, he even mentions, at one point in here, he even mentions Kereny's treatise on Kori, which I'm sure the Periferians would warm up to. So this is the path of the Eleusinian mysteries. Now also, too, this is the path of the element of the earth, and you go down into the earth, and you should master the earth element. So you master the earth element, and you also have an aspect of sacrifice here, and that should be attributed to Saturn. And so consequently, you have a number of things in this path. And this is why they're called paths, by the way, a number of things in this path that you need to do, you need to accomplish, you need to find out about yourself. Because, of course, the whole process of magic, as you know, is knowing yourself. And knowing yourself all the way back as far as yourself goes, and that's really the kind of the business of magic, actually. Remember, I think it was Socrates who said, we don't think anything, we don't invent anything new, we just remember. Yeah, and over the Oracle of Delphi, over the cave, they had written, know yourself. And of course, you know our motto in the OTA is, Nostra te ipsum tuis Deus, know yourself, you are God. And so the whole business here, the whole great work, really, is to start from the bottom of the tree, learn yourself all the way up the top of the tree, and then, you know, start off as the arch fool and end up as the pure fool. That's the job. So, and there's a lot here in this path that that we can learn about ourselves. Now, one thing that we do, so at that point, I think it's time for us to talk about how we did it, because I think you have enough of the idea of what you're supposed to do here. So this is how we did it. We got Kerpole's wonderful method, and I'll tell you, the first time, when Apollonius did that over in the Yellow Church over there on Lake Avenue back in 1971, and he did that pathworking, that Kerpole pathworking, and that blew me away. I thought, oh boy, I said, we have to capitalize this. So I got my Gareth Knight, and I went into it, and used some of our Phoenician ideas too, and came up with our pathworkers. Now, recently, what we've done is take our pathworkers, which have been for years done in the temple, and most of the time with all of the people going on the path, they lie on the floor in their black robes, in the middle of the circle, looking up at the big mirror hanging overhead, and the mirror has the particular Tantra symbol, which in this case is Praviti, the earth symbol, which is, I don't know, a yellow square with a kind of a violet background. And that's on the mirror, and then they go through that sphere in through the mirror, but they're led by the guide who first puts them into a trance and then narrates the path working. And we quite often we do this from memory. And actually, it's kind of good to do it from memory because the magus who's leading the path working, if he does it from memory, he can get deeper into it. And he actually can really just go right along with the people that are going. Whereas if you read it, there's a little bit of distance there. And of course, so consequently, actually this recording that we have, and it's really, it's not just a recording, it's a DVD. And we actually had, we go into the temple, and I welcome you into the temple, and we go inside. The temple's Molson Vibe, our Pasadena temple. And I have you in there, and I'm in my robe, and I get up there and sit down in my chair behind the, on the other side of the soul door, and we show the soul door, and we show the whole temple, and everything leading up to it, including the tattoo on the mirror, and I go ahead and I get you go through this whole hypnotic procedure, and take you right through that tattoo, and then you close your eyes, and I run this whole path working. And we put a drone behind it, so it's a little more hypnotic. And run the whole path working, and then when it's done, they bring you back out of it, into the temple, and then give you the attention points so that you can recover the attention points. We also have some nice graphics that describe the path and all of that. And now, if you should open your eyes while you're watching this thing on your TV or on your computer, if you should open your eyes at any point, we have that Lemurian vortex that you will recall from Beyond Lemuria, that nice Lemurian vortex in the different colors of the elements going, swirling around there, and will take you right back into that trance. So this is a very nice thing. And we have all four elemental path workings. So that means we have the 32nd and the 31st over to Hod, and the 29th over to Netzach. And then way up on the top of the tree, we went and did the left way up the top because we wanted to do all the elements. And that's so to fill in that kind of gap. So the air path working, we have that one too. And so this reason why I'm mentioning this is that what I'm going to tell you about how this pathway works, if you're an associate member for a reasonable donation, we'll send you this pathway. And you have to be an associate member to get it because, quite frankly, I don't want to sell this. I really don't want to sell this because I don't think that people who haven't been through a certain amount of magical training and lessons, I just don't think that this is a commercial thing, even though it's attractive and all that. But I don't think it's commercial. So this is for associate members, and it's an induction into this. And now, what happens on the path? Okay. So we start out from Malkuth, and we're going to go into underground, as the symbolism indicates, and we're going to go down into this cavern, and first we're going to visit the jewels and all the different jewels of the psychic centers and the different jewels, and we're going to find a jewel that we relate to, and we're going to commune with this jewel. And that's an interesting experience. That's an attention point. We'll remember that. And then we're going to go and visit the gnomes. Now, in order to do this, we have to go and we have to experience one of our time travel techniques. And I won't spoil that for you by giving you I won't do a spoiler on that one, but this is a very interesting time travel technique. It's kind of the underground version of our celestial time travel technique, if you will. And so you get to the kingdom of the gnomes, which of course is in geological time rather than in regular time. And then you get to visit the gnomes. Now, as you probably know, some of you know, I have a magical novel I've been working on for quite a while, and I'm going to have it. I've got one more chapter to go for the first book of it, and so we'll publish it before too much longer. This is Adamson's Quest, and I'll read you a little bit of Adamson's Quest where he gets into it with the gnomes here. And let's see. So we pick up here. I should. You can see the gnomes only at the speed of their vibrations, which was in geological rather than biological context. His train of thought was interspersed by a gravel voice. Have ye come for our treasure? Speak true, I warn ye. Adamson turned to face the grizzled leader who had challenged him, still trying to maintain his balance on the slippery rocks. No, but I may need your help in finding mine, he said. As oily an answer as ever I heard. Who sent ye? The gnome chief demanded. Trismegistus. There was a chorus of harsh laughter. We ain't the last one he sent, the chief said. Had his pockets stuffed with our jewels and nuggets. I've taken nothing, Adamson said. He's after the mother lode, another gnome said under his beard. Let's hoist him. Let's baste him with mushroom gravy, the third suggested. The king will decide, the old chief said. And then he turned to Adamson. Come ashore carefully. If you fall in yon water, you will be caught between now and then. And where's a minute is a thousand years, and none can save ye. As Adamson gingerly negotiated the last few stepping stones, he wondered if a sudden dive into the limbo of the time pool might be preferable to becoming an entree on the Gnome King's menu. And when his feet touched the bank, they pounced on him, throwing him down and pressing him up from his ankles to his neck and stout ropes, and their strength was amazing, and their muscles were as hard as granite, and their hands gripped him like iron clamps, and they hoisted him up on their shoulders, and they carried him off like a log, singing a song that did little to raise Adamson's spirits. Oh, we've caught us one of the breathing ones, the wasteful ones, the thieving ones. Only here for just a wink, hardly longer than you think. And dig it up, cut it down, strew the leavings all around. Now, of course, naturally, the Gnome King takes pity on Adamson and gives him a gift and all of that. And by the way, our pathworking is nowhere near that scary. The gnomes are kind of friendly, actually, in the pathworking. But anyway, we go through the gnomes and get their wisdom and their gift, and then come on out into mythological time. We come up out of the cavern, up under an oak tree, and we're in this, what we call the Forest of Fear. And this is part of the symbolism of the path now, is this forest. And this forest used to stretch all the way from the Russian steppes all the way to the west coast of Ireland. I mean, it was all oak trees, and they all got cut down to make ships, of course. But back in those days, back in the earliest times, this was our forest, and it was the forest of fear. But it was also our original ancestral home where we find ourselves. Now, Adamson, as he goes through here and discovers his alter ego and has quite a few adventures. But basically, what you'll do is you'll go through the forest of fear, and you'll come to the sacred grove where you have the tree calendar from Robert Graves' White Goddess, all the plants and the bushes and the trees all in a circle, in a sort of living hinge, and you find your particular tree or your bush or your shrub that relates to your birth date, and then you communicate with the spirit of the plant, the dryad, and then you remember that. And write it down in your book of memory. Then we go on, and we go on to this T-shaped dolmen that overlooks the Gulf of Nepesh. And there's where you climb up on this T-shaped dolmen, which of course represents Tau, Saturn. And the ray from the Colossus has this great crystal on his back, and he's way out in the water in this huge Colossus. There's a causeway that goes out to him, and this Colossus has this huge crystal like Atlas on his back, and the great ray hits you as you're up on the Tau, sort of self crucifixion. This is based on something that Gareth Knight, I'll read you a little bit in here, and then Gareth Knight. The astrological sign, I'm reading Gareth Knight now, the astrological sign of the path of Saturn, a sign composed of cross and the moon, is thus apt for linking Malkuth to Assad. Saturn is considered the planet of restriction and limitation, and therefore implies form. It's also the planet of supernal contacts, and however so as with Malkuth, there is an intimate connection between this path and the Sephirah Bina, the mother of form. The sickle is also the symbol of Saturn, as is implied by the shape of the astrological sign, and this was the weapon which Cronos, time, castrated his father Uranus' face. And here again, the symbolic guise of the limitation and destruction of spirit of time and form. The sickle is also the reaping instrument, recalling the wheat and grain mysteries. And by the way, this relates to Adonia coming up here. Mote, the Grim Reaper, is going to cut all sheaf of wheat. And that's very, very much a part of this path of the sickle and the wheat. And the cross is the cross of, in this sense, cross of sacrifice and a cross of initiation, because the ray from Yasod we use to simulate the activation of the Yasod chakra as you're up on the cross. Now, you come down from the cross and go out over the causeway and all the way up to the... Now, the image, one of the classical Kabbalistic images of the Assad is this great big huge statue, a male statue, and this is why we put the spear of the Assad on his back like Atlas, and it's like a giant crystal ball, and you climb all the way up around the spiral ramp all the way up to the top of the top of this, and you go on into the crystal. And as you go into the crystal, you get younger and younger, and then finally you go into a previous lifetime, and then you recover one of your previous lifetimes, and you remember this. And we have a very good way of doing that. And so this is because your son is also considered to be the sphere of memory and the sphere of the magic mirror. Now, as I also want to mention too, that Malkuth, as some people were asking after last week, and when I said that Malkuth was the spirit of the HGA, the Holy Guardian Angel, they were wondering about that. And Gareth Knight says, even here, he says that the Tower trumped the universe. This card is called the Great One of the Night of Time, and one of the contacts of this path is the contact with this Great One, who can be considered the Godhead itself, a small fragment of God consciousness assigned to each man, is the Holy Guardian Angel, the knowledge and conversation of which is the spiritual experience of Malkuth. In other words, Malkuth is where it comes on down. It comes down the lightning flash, down this path, down to Malkuth. So you're going up and following that lightning flash that you followed, but you're going back up the other way. And you're following, in a sense, the path of the snake going upward. Now, attributes of this path, as I said, is the Demeter and the Kori, the Greek Kori, Demeter, the Eleusinian Mysteries, the idea, the whole idea of the goddess of nature and going down into the underworld and then coming back up. And this path really relates to that. It relates to this aspect of mythology. And I'm going to read you a little bit of what Gareth Knight has here on the goddesses, and he's quoting Dion Fortune, by the way, on this. In the fragments of this rite of Isis given in Dion Fortune's novels, The Sea Priestess and Moon Magic, the all-inclusiveness of the feminine side of the deity is given as follows. I am she who, ere the earth was formed, was Rhea, Bina, and Gaia. I am that soundless, boundless, bitter sea, out of whose deeps life flows eternally. Astarte, Aphrodite, Astaroth, giver of life and bringer in of death. Hera in heaven, on earth Persephone, Diana of the ways and Hecate. All these I am, and they are seen in me. And the same source also gives a version of the entrance to the 32nd path. Sink down, sink down, sink deeper and move and more deep into eternal and primordial sleep. Sink down, be still, forget and draw apart into the inner earth's most secret heart. Drink of the waters of Persephone, the secret well beside the sacred tree. Who drinks the waters of that hidden well shall see the things whereof he dare not tell, shall tread the shadow path that leads to me, Diana of the ways and Hecate, Serene of the moon, Persephone. And now, I think that's beautiful. That's from Dion Fortune, by the way. The experience of the path is one that leads us up to one of the most important aspects of the magical experience, and that is to fully enter into the astral realm of Yasod. And this, as you will recall from our earlier lessons broadcast, Yasod is the entrance, the beginning of the zero dimension, the astral plane, and it is the sphere of memory and the sphere of the moon. And you'll recall, and everything is reflected through it, and this is why it's in the position it's in the tree. It is the great reflector. And if you recall in Picatrix, we are told over and over again that the moon is the most important astrological feature, aspect, and body that we have, and that no operation of magic, no operation of elective astrology should ever, ever ignore the moon, or should ever be done when the moon is not in a favorable aspect, unless you want an unfavorable result. So the moon is tremendously important. And I want to point out that there are two different, you know, more than that actually, but there are two primary ways in which you can align the chakras for your yoga experiences. There are two different ways you can align the chakras for your magical working. Now, our way follows Rigardi's middle pillar exercise. When I say Rigardi's middle pillar, it was originally came from an idea that Falcon put into the Golden Dawn. Dr. Falcon was second generation Golden Dawn, and he, back in the 1920s, he put in the beginning of his middle pillar. Rigardi really perfected it, and perfected it up to the point of having the middle pillar itself. He didn't put the rest of the spheres in it. I think he was going to. If you carefully read his Art of Truth Healing, you see that he had the other spheres, and at the end of the article, he had the other spheres all lined out and all their attributes. He just didn't go the extra mile of putting them, of straightening out the lightning flash and applying them. I think if he had lived longer, and I think he would have. I also think he probably would have approved of how we continued with his particular system. Now, Rigardi was the one who really perfected the middle pillar exercise, which is, of course, a form of yoga. And in the middle pillar exercise, you bring the light down from above. As we do in the Kabbalah, you bring the light down from above, from Kether. You bring it down the middle pillar all the way down, from through to Tippereth, and then down to Yasod, and then he put Malkuth down in the feet. Well, Dionne Fortune, she went a little further. She said Malkuth could be in the feet, or it could be in the perineum, in the rear end, which it would be if you're sitting in a sauna. Well, from all of this, we, using Mitchell's Renaissance model, we went ahead and finished up Rigardi's system and put all the chakras of the lightning flash right down the spheres. So this is one way, and we think this is the right way to do it. This means Yasod falls right in the genital region, where it frankly should, because the astral plane has a lot of sexual, it's almost driven by sexual energy of one form or another, and the moon and Yasod really belong in that position, I think. Now, the other way of doing this, which follows, I think Paul Case did some experimenting with this, is to take the paths. Don't consider the spheres at all. Just consider the paths and use the attributes, the planetary attributes on the paths to determine your chakra arrangement. Well, this ends up putting Mars in the genital region, and I don't like that at all. even though women do have some testosterone, I will agree with that. But I don't like that, and it doesn't feel right. And I would like to point out that that in following along with the Guardian with us and all, you saw what you're going to on the 32nd path. Should be, I think, it, from our point of view, ought to be that Hermetic Yoga Chakra should be the genital chakra that you're heading for. Now, then you'll move up from there. You would go up to Haut, and following the number sequence. Now, if you do. The problem with doing this path arrangement for chakras is that the number sequence, then the sphere number sequence is all kind of bollocked up. Actually, I think deep meditation on this should indicate that the spheres are really more important. In as far as chakras are concerned, the sphere arrangement is more important than the path arrangement. Paths get you to spheres, you know, and spheres are spheres, and they should be the chakras. Well, you know, that's our opinion anyway. This particular path could be called, in a way, you might call it the path of the dragon, because you are going to awaken when you do your yoga. You're going to awaken the dragon down in his cave, and he is going to go up. To your son, and so consequently. One could call this, in this sense, the path of the dragon. Yet, traditionally, you should walk the path. You should walk the path in order to reach the symbolism as a pilgrim, to reach the symbolism as a pilgrim and to understand it. Now, the way the intention points work in a path working is this. The guide will describe that we're coming to a stone arch, and we stand beneath the stone arch, and carved across the lintel of the stone arch above us is an inscription. And we read that inscription, and it's in a language we can understand, and we read it, and it has a special message for us, and we remember it. And then you're given, say about 5 seconds or so, or maybe about 7 seconds, to get that fixed in your mind, and you will see it. You'll see that inscription, and you'll see those words, and you will understand them, and you will remember them. And then we'll go on to the next attention point. And the next attention point might be a mythological creature who will have a message for you that you will understand. It's just for you. And that mythological creature will tell you something, and you will remember it. And I credit Kirpal with this, Kirpal Singh, the Sikh Sant Guru, with this idea, because some of the path workings that I read before I encountered Kirpal's method, they didn't do it this specifically. Sure, you go and you see something and you think about it and you remember it, but the way Kirpal did it, he made you, in a nice way, he made you see this specifically for you, and gave it to you, and so you could actually remember it. It wasn't something you were sort of kind of maybe you might get it or something like that. This you really did make it specific, and so I felt that because, you know, otherwise. There really isn't. Yeah, this otherwise would be kind of an entertainment.
But being with this sort of an approach, it becomes actually a real initiation. So in a lot of ways, these pathworkings are actually like initiations. Now, I want you to remember that if you go ahead and sign up for the Associate Member Program, that's easy to do and all that. And it'll go, you know, right on the top of our Hermetic Hour website. We have that particular program that describes the whole thing and how you get into it. And then you can, you know, get with us and do your three lessons. We have three lessons. They're real easy. The way we do these lessons, instruction in the Associate Member Program, is kind of based on Scottish Rite's Master Craftsman's course. And the way they do it, I really think is great. They just give you, you know, a chapter, material to read. And then they ask you to fill in the gaps. They ask you questions that all you have to do is read the material to answer the questions. So the whole purpose of the examination is just to make sure you've read the material and kind of make sure you understand it. But, I mean, that's all it is. It's just if you've read the material, you could answer the questions because the questions are right there in the material, you know. So it's not really a pass-fail kind of a thing or anything like that. It's an instructional tool. And we're not, you know, we're not trying to say that this is, we're going to pass or fail or all that kind of stuff. But you get those lessons out of the way and then order the path workings and we'll send them right on out and you will really, really enjoy them. And you'll be then prepared to be able to take them. And now, next week, this weekend we're going to do Adonijo. That's our summer solstice, summer solstice ritual, in which we're going to chop the wheat. Moat's going to chop a bale sheaf of wheat and put old bale down for another 3 months. And so next week, we're going to have the Lodge Masters from Texas and from Georgia. We're all going to talk about Adonijo next week and exchange stories. So if you want to find out what goes on in summer solstice, be sure to turn in. And good magic.